Blog Talk Radio. That's right.
You are now listening to the Sinister Topology.
That's right. That's right.
Good evening, everybody. This is Mystic Politics Radio with your host, Everett Tucker. Tonight, we're going to have on Josh Reeves, researcher and radio show host extraordinaire. We are going to be chatting live via www.blogtalkradio.com/mysticpolitics. We have a chat and go chat room right there, so if everyone wants to file in there and start dropping some comments for us, that would be excellent. It looks like we have Mr. Josh Reeves calling in right now, so let's get him on air. And there is a slight delay. So I also wanted to let everybody know my co-host, Nick Sparrow, is no longer going to be on the show. We had to move in different directions as far as what we wanted the show to be. So we will be doing it solo from now on. Josh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here with you, Everett. Thanks for having me on tonight.
No problem, man. And I'm super excited about tonight. I've been listening to your show for the last couple months, and just from what I've been able to learn as far as NWO research, you know, the priest class, the elite, and a lot of the esoteric stuff that you get into, man, is very, very interesting, right? You know, you got me addicted. I tune in every day. Where can we listen to your show at?
Well, you can check me out every Monday through Friday from 11 to 3 Central Standard Time on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, and also on Saturday nights from 10 to midnight on Oracle Broadcasting. And, we tend to try to get into everything, wide spectrum view of it. But tonight I think we're going to be concentrating, solely on the contents of my newest film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1, which is out now, which, by the way, for those of people that don't know, when I first showed it, as soon as I got it done, I had to, you know, I didn't want to put it online yet, or it wasn't really out yet, but I had a few showings on Justin TV, and believe it or not, I think Everett here watched it. I was like, well, would you watch it like 5 times in a row the first couple times I showed it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, yeah, I was very, I mean, just the amount of information there is just amazing. And I believe if anybody wants to get the DVD in high quality, they can get it at the Global Reality Show, or theglobalreality.com, or thesecretrite.com, or secretrightmovie.com, correct?
Yeah, any one of those works, secretrightmovie.com or thesecretrite.com. Yeah, exactly. Any one of those works, and that'll get them there, yes.
Yeah, definitely. And I really recommend people get it, because it's one of those movies where I had to watch it myself about 3 to 4 times, and I've watched it a couple times this week again, and every time I watch it, it forms new connections, kind of new neurological pathways, and connects stuff that weren't previously connected for me. And so I really recommend people get it so they can watch it and pause it and take notes and do everything necessary to really absorb all the information there. And it kind of reminds me of how you said – I remember listening to your show while you were editing it together, and you said it's not really a problem of putting together a 2-hour movie. It's choosing how much information to throw in there. And I can definitely see what you meant, because it seems like you've done so much research. It's kind of you had to edit yourself a little bit to in order for people to absorb it.
Yeah, there was no way in hell for me to be able to even. I mean, first off, to be honest with you, this information pertaining that we're talking about tonight and going to be talking about pertaining to the specifically to the Council for National Policy and on all the tentacles thereof. Really, and I talked about this before also. If I would have known how difficult of a film this was going to be to make before I made it, I don't think I would have made this film, much less to be working on a volume two. Because you can go and do the research on this, and there's so many tentacles, there's so many offshoot groups, there's so many implications that I don't think it would ever. I mean, to me, it would be completely impossible to ever make a definitive film on this group. I mean, you'd have to make 10 or 20 films to ever really get even the a big picture of this stuff. So that was another one of the aspects of why I made the film as well, was just a primer. I mean, very rarely, Everett, when you're coming into the world of this type of research, very rarely, and I've never had it happen to me again, and I don't know if I ever will, very rarely do you ever have a topic that is largely ignored and largely untouched to where you have an opportunity to really be a trendsetter and a groundbreaker on. And this one really fell in my lap from the time I went on air, the second show that I ever did, and it just fell in my lap. And ever since then, it's just sent me down this trail of researching, wanting to find out more. And at that time, when I found out about it, I had just come out with my first film, 9/11 New World Rising. So I was kind of looking for the next subject matter to make a film about. So this was perfect. But again, I just hope really, because this information is so little known about, very, very few people know about the Council for National Policy, and there are very good reasons for that, which we'll talk about extensively here tonight on the show. But mm-hmm. I think that, the main thing about it was that I really shifted the focus several times. I mean, I had the film halfway done a few times and just completely threw it all away and started all over, because it started some of the early incarnations of it just began really to be a whole bunch of information with nothing connecting it together. So really what I ended up with, and I'm happy with the way the film that came out, as far as, I don't think that I could have made the film better than I did, as far as, trying to just be a primer for the information and to just get people to do research like yourself and others. I mean, you talked about how many notes you had made while you watched the film. And I think that's the main thing that I want people to do, is just to take notes and research it. And as you said, when you watch it multiple times, things that maybe you didn't make sense to you the first time around will make sense to you if you go out and do research on it. And that's the thing is that a lot of the stuff, when I first started looking at it, I didn't get it. It didn't make sense to me. And then when I had other information, I had other context and went back and looked at stuff, then it made a lot more sense to me. Stuff like the moon, the Reverend Sun Young Moon stuff and all that. But there's just so much information in this, Everett, that, you could research this stuff forever. And I still learn more about the CMP every day. But it is a very powerful group. But we'll get into all that tonight on the show for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let's get into it here. Now, we have about 22 minutes. We like to break up the show and put a little music on so people get about 28-minute increments. So I wanted to get into a little bit on what led you into the research where you really discovered the CNP, the power of them, and what was the catalyst for you feeling that the secret right needed to get made?
Well, the biggest thing was, when I did the second show that I ever did, I started on radio, and when I started on radio, I was your typical, real sort of, patriot truther type of guy, just really run-of-the-mill. There wasn't really anything special about me, other than I had been looking at stuff probably longer than most people had, and had come in from a background of, from esoteric side and secret societies and different stuff like that, looking at that, and then got involved with activism, doing 9/11 truth stuff for a while, and then decided that I've been a musician, done music for a lot of years, and decided I want to get into video. So I started to learn how to do that, and made a little short film. I need to put it online. It's not online anywhere. I made a little. It's not really a film. It's just basically a collection of clips, really just thrown together. And it was called "Living in the Material World." It was just this collection. It had stuff on chemtrails, and it had 9/11 footage, and it had like, you know, a couple of Alex Jones things in there. It just had in a History Channel documentary on secret societies with like David Icke and Jim Morris. I just took a bunch of stuff and threw it together. And Google or YouTube or none of these places would never allow it to be posted online. So then I started saying, okay, well, I want to start making a real film. Yeah, and I decided to try to make a real film, and then that led me to making 9/11 New World Rising, because I just had all this stuff on 9/11, so I went ahead and made that. And then I started hanging out in a chat room for a network called TrueNet Radio that's no longer around, and started hanging out with Mike Chambers and getting to know some other guys. And Mike Chambers had me on a few times, and there was a gentleman who used to do a show on TrueNet Radio, and he went to New York for 9/11 in 2007. And I sat in for him and did two shows. And after that, it was people were like, okay, well, we need to get this guy his own show. So Mike Chambers gave me my own show, and I did one show. And then the next day, when I was preparing for my second show, I got an email from a guy by the name of Peter Dale Scott, Professor Peter Dale Scott, former Canadian diplomat and researcher and author, who's done extensive work on the Iran-Contra and 9/11 and the rest of it. And we had an event here to premiere my first film, but we were going to try to bring Peter Dale Scott, and it didn't work out, so we had William Rodriguez instead. And then he said, well, okay, would you like to have me in Dallas? I said, no, we already had the event, thanks, but I am doing a radio show now. In fact, I'm doing a radio show tonight at 6 o'clock. Would you like to come on and be the guest? And he said, sure. So we started talking about the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, because that was, you know, I really wanted to get his take on what he thought the power of these groups were in the power structure. And immediately he just kind of stopped me and interrupted me and said, well, those groups are important, but they really don't have the power that they have anymore. But we are told they have the power. That's a key thing. I don't think that I mentioned enough that Peter Dale Scott said, is that with the CFR and the Trilateral Commission now, there's more of an illusion that they have more power than they actually do. Now, I think that's very interesting in light of the fact that you hear people like Alex Jones and others, you know, saying, oh, the CFR is the most powerful, Bilderberg is the most powerful. And I do remember Peter Dale Scott saying, you know, that it's the illusion that they still have such power. And he said that there was this other group on the right wing that was more powerful, more secretive, that was created in Dallas in the early 1980s. And they had all these, you know, different people in it that were involved with the military industrial complex in Blackwater. And at first, initially, I didn't hear when he said the name of the group. I just heard him kind of say blah, 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 something. I went back and listened to the archive. I said, whoa, what the hell is that? I've never heard of that group. So I went back and started listening to it. And lo and behold, he said Council for National Policy. So that was about, you know, I don't know, that was 9, 7 o'clock at night. I stayed up until 5 o'clock in the morning that night just researching the group. And I started finding all these names. I started seeing people that I'd seen and heard about in Patriot Radio. I started seeing these weird connections. I started finding out about Larry Pratt, Paul Craig Roberts, and all these other people. And I started going, wait a second here. I started seeing people that, you know, have been associated with Ron Paul. Of course, Lewis Lehrman, the guy who was a signatory on the PNAC, Project for New American Century documents, who wrote a gold book with Ron Paul. And so I called Mike Chambers and I said, you know, hey, I need you to look at something here. This seems very strange. And we started talking about, we're like, you know, this is what we think it is. This is going to have some serious implications to it. So I sort of talked about it a little bit, and I kept talking about it and talking about it more and more and more. And then eventually it got to the point where, you know, I mean, nobody wanted to hear about this stuff when I first started talking about it. And that was my first week of shows, and I was really, you know, it was a stressful week for me because I was processing, you know, doing a show for the first time and then having this new information that to me at the time felt like it could blow the lid off everything that everybody knew, thought they knew about everything, about the New World Order, about the elite, about the truth movement, about everything. And, you know, almost, and you know, the synchronicity always abounds with this stuff. And lo and behold, Everett, that weekend, I was looking at some news sites and stuff, you know, doing some news gathering. And, you know, and I mean, nobody I talked to had ever heard of the group. And there, lo and behold, on rawstory.com and some other websites there where I was looking at news at, there is an article that says Dick Cheney meets in Salt Lake City with secretive right-wing group. And I went, what? Wait a second here. And I pulled it up and I looked, and sure enough. And actually, you know, I couldn't get this clip for my film. I'm going to try to get it for volume two. There's actually a clip out there. It's on Google. You can find it. And it's a clip from the Jon Stewart show. And it's the only clip I've ever been able to find, and I've got to try to find it to buy it from Comedy Central if I can find it. But it's the only clip I've ever seen where they actually address the Council for National Policy, where John Stewart literally says Dick Cheney went and met with the secretive group, the Council for National Policy, and he says, here's what their logo might look like. And he shows a freaking unicorn's bloody stump head on a post, and it says Council for National Policy. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen, man. I mean, I was like, oh, I mean, that's the only time, though, that it's the only example that I've ever been able to find of them talking about the Council for National Policy in any sort of mainstream news setting. We went through ABC, NBC. We went through the vaults because you can go and buy this footage, and it's unfreaking godly expensive to buy it. And we bought most of these clips we got from the film. We actually bought these from the news archives, licensed footage, and it's very expensive to do so. We got it like close to like almost $1,000 worth of footage, I think, in the film, and that's only with like buying like 10 clips. So that's it doesn't sound like a lot of money to people, but it sure as hell is a lot of money to me. That's the thing about it is that I was sort of in that period where I was about to start making a film on secret societies and whatnot, and then this fell in my lap, and here it was, and I said, okay, boom, I'm going to make a film about the Council for National Policy. At that time, I didn't know how I was going to make it. I didn't know what it was going to be. And hell, I mean, I didn't even know everything there was to know about the group. And I still don't. I'm still learning stuff. But I sure know a lot more now than even somebody like Peter Del Scott does. You hear him talk on the Alex Jones show, and he just didn't know anything. But he's in his 80s now, and it's not his primary focus. But I just felt, Everett, that, you know, if we're going to really truly say that we're going to fight the New World Order, then we have to expose everything about it. I mean, even if it does, you know, cause dissension, and even if it does cause people to call you names and say you're trying to be a divider, and even if it does expose your heroes. I mean, look, I had to have my bubble busted on a lot of this stuff. A lot of these people I used to look up to. You know, I used to be a huge. You've given me some shit about that on my in the chat room before. Right. You know, I used to be a huge Pat Buchanan fan. You know. I
was a big advocate for Ron Paul myself, as far as you know, blogs and shooting out comments. I think a lot of people, you know, and I think the point is a lot of the people we're presented with as heroes, kind of like how Jesse Ventura is being promoted now, you know, they're just controlled opposition and kind of honeypots to draw people away from the once you go down that path of truth. It's lined with people to wave you over and get you off the right path. And I definitely think that Pat Buchanan's one of those, and he was kind of Ron Paul-esque in the 80s, and definitely Jesse Ventura now, and Ron Paul for sure.
Well, bottom line, these guys are gatekeepers. That's the main thing about it is that they're put out there to talk a good game, but they're there in the end to keep people in a specific political paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And all right, well, I wanted to get into real quick about who are the CNP, how do they operate, and how are their members, which are extensive, and hopefully you can get into a little bit of that. I know Rush Limbaugh, Sarah Palin, McCain, a lot of the people who are being groomed to be the next wave of, I don't know if you want to call it, I forget the new term for conservative, but right-wing, the new right-wing elite are members of the CNP, and how are they groomed and chosen?
Well, the thing about it is that anybody who's anybody in right-wing politics, and I mean high, low, any level of it, really doesn't matter what brand of right-wing politics that you're talking about. That's one of the things people have to understand. Is, you know, you'll hear people like Alex Jones say, well, these are the phony right wingers. But I don't believe in the false right paradigm, but these are phony right wingers. No, wait a second. These are the true, real deal right wingers, and they encompass everything. They encompass the neocons, they encompass the evangelicals, they encompass the sort of third party ish, independent, maybe libertarian leaning side. They encompass your Catholic theocrats, your Jesuits, your Knights of Malta, your Zionists. Anybody and everybody who is anybody in the right wing, be it media, mainstream media, news, activism, any of these groups, even on up into the upper echelons of government, Navy, ops, special ops, black ops, high-ranking military officials, anybody who's anybody in any level of the right wing is a member of the Council for National Policy, because it is an exclusive group that has high membership dues. They meet three times a year in total secrecy in posh hotels. They meet in the same, and subsequently, what's interesting, Everett, is that they meet in the same, I guess you would call chain or brand of hotels as the Bilderberg Group does. They meet at almost identical ones. And they, but, you know, that's the whole thing, is that my question, first off, when I first heard about the group, was where's the Jim Tuckers of the world at? Where are these guys at? Well, then you find out that Jim Tucker's magazine that he writes for, that used to be a Spotlight, is ran and operated by none other than Willis Carto, who's a Council for National Policy member. And so there your question gets answered right immediately. But going back to the group, and I'm not sure how much the membership costs are, but they are high. And you do have to be vetted by every other member of the group, meaning if say, Everett, you wanted to apply for a membership for Council for National Policy, sure. First off, you'd have to be able to afford the dues. But then again, every person in the group, and I mean everybody from, you know, from John Ashcroft to Rush Limbaugh to Alan Keyes, Carlton Banks, on down to him, you know, you got to be approved by these guys. You have to be vetted. And so going back to the other part of your question, though, how the group was formed and when it was formed, really one of the best books you can read about on this subject is a book I read some out of this week on my program called The Coors Connection. And this was written in 1988 by Russ Ballant. And this book really details a lot of that and really came out of the you can go all the way back to 1959 at the formation of the John Birch Society. You can go to get into the World Anti-Communist League. You can get into the what's that other group? The Western Goals Foundation. And then, of course, into the 1970s through the formation of the Heritage Foundation, which was founded and funded by the Sovereign Military Order of Malta members Richard Vidry and Joseph Coors. And essentially what this was a group where the big money could come in and set the policies for the Republican Party. And what ended up happening was that they had to figure out a way to be able to fund this thing and to have mass amount of funding where they could control and basically blanket the entire Republican Party. This is when the Reverend Tim LaHaye in 1981 with funding received from the Sovereign Military Order of Malta family, the Hunt Oil Brothers, set up this group. And what's amazing is that, you know, I didn't find out until weeks before my film came out that Tim LaHaye, the author of the Left Behind books, had been vehemently out in public, and you can go look at some online, anti-Catholic. And here is a guy starting one of the most powerful and in secretive groups out there and doing it with funding he's getting from freaking Catholics. I'm going, you know, this is a phony. And this is one of the main things about this group that you see, Everett, is the fact that, you know, the whole thing of, oh, well, these people don't get along and so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, you know, or just because so-and-so, you know, spoke at this group, or just because Michael Badnarik was a keynote speaker at this at the meeting in 2004, just because Jack McLam says that he's a member doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Well, certainly not. But don't you think that anybody that tells you we got to fight the New World Order and, oh, they're going to come around and put a mailbox sticker on your mailbox and then come around you up and take you and shoot you in the back of the head? Don't you think you should be concerned about a group with anybody like Jack McLam, who openly admits to it on his website that he's a member? Don't you think we should be concerned with people like that sitting at the same table as people like Alberto Crush Their Genitals Gonzalez and John Ashcroft and Larry Pratt, who we're supposed to put our gun rights in the hands of, sitting up there with Lieutenant Gordon Sumner, who ran ops in South America, Oliver North. You know, on and on and on. Rush Limbaugh, as you mentioned earlier, Phyllis Schlafly. You've got Gary Bauer. You've got 33rd degree Freemasons in there, such as Jesse Helms when he was alive. You've got people like the former head when he was alive. All these guys are dead now. But the question is that we don't have answer quite yet, Everett, is who was taking over their places. But you've got people like J. Peter Grace, who was the former head, the former titular head of all Sovereign Military Order of Malta members in the country of the United States. John K. Singlib, on and on and on. And all these people are very high level, but we'll talk about more of these members in just a minute.
What was the who's the head of the American branch of the SMOM? What was that name?
It was J. Peter Grace. I'm not quite sure who it was now. But at that time it was a guy by the name of J. Peter Grace. I feature him in my film quite a bit. Actually, I've got a clip that was going to be in Volume 2 that we didn't get in Volume 1 of J. Peter Grace in the 1980s talking about, talking about where the economy in the future is going to go, and it's everything that's happening right now. And this guy he worked hand-in-hand with Nazis. He set up Radio Liberty, which was a Nazi Sovereign Military Order of Malta front, which later on became Dr. Stanley Monteith's radio program's name. They just transferred it over to him. J. Peter Grace was involved with AmeriCares and was one of the primary funders of the money that was going down to South America to the Contras. Yes, he was the this guy was also on the Council for National Policy Board of Governors in 1982, and he was also a Council on Foreign Relations member. So there are a few of those, but J. Peter Grace was not only on the Board of Governors of the CNP, but also CFR and the head of the Knights of Malta in this country. J. Peter Grace, write that name down, ladies and gentlemen. And he's like somebody you need to look into, because I mean, you want to talk about tentacles in every and everything you imagine, from Nazis to the CFR to the CMP to the Knights of Malta. This guy was everywhere.
Now, another guy that kind of seems that way is Larry McDonald. And in the film Secret Right, it showcases a very, very, very interesting the term has been thrown around, pure gold, a clip of Tom Braden, Larry McDonald, and Pat Buchanan kind of really just having an argument for argument's sake, for the media's sake, kind of differentiating the groups to us, I think is mainly to kind of put out the public info that the JBS and the CFR have very different goals and that they squall amongst themselves. And it kind of leads me to wonder about this guy, Larry McDonald. Now, I know that he'd been, there's a little bit of mystery in regards to his death, but from referring back to my show notes here from The Secret Right, now, Larry McDonald had started, the Gehlen organization under the CIA with Reinhard Gehlen, a former intelligence officer under Hitler, and let me see here. I believe in 1979. I wanted to know, and Larry McDonald is a very, very interesting cat to me. And I was wondering what you can tell us about his relationship with the CIA as chairman emeritus with the John Birch Society, and why you felt if they did, ultimately he got taken out.
Well, sure. And I'll tell you that one of the main things, people just cannot wrap their minds around with Larry McDonald. A lot of people in the Patriot Movement, the predominant view of Larry McDonald is that. He was a good guy, and he was a whistleblower, and he was murdered for his beliefs that he had against the New World Order. And I really want to protest that. I really say that's anything but the case. You need to go back and study Larry McDonald and really go look at what his middle name is, Larry Patton McDonald. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard correct. He is also the nephew of none other than the infamous General Patton,
wow.
who was killed mysteriously as well as his nephew was in a car crash that a lot of people believe was a conspiracy involved in that as well. But a lot of people don't know that he was this guy was high level. And not only that, you're absolutely correct. He was involved in setting up things with Reinhard Gehlen, who Reinhard Gehlen, of course, was Knights of Malta as well. Larry McDonald was also Jesuit trained. He was also trained and went to a Jesuit university, a Jesuit school, and was trained. All heads of the John Birch Society were, including Robert Welch, their founder, and, of course, the person who succeeded Larry McDonald after his death and who is still ensconced there today, famous favorite guest of Alex Jones, none other than John McManus. But going back, if you go back and you study the World Anti-Communist League, the Western Goals Foundation, you had Larry McDonald running operations in South America, trying to destabilize the governments down there and trying to install puppet regimes that led eventually to the situations with the Iran-Contra. you had that going on in the 1970s, and of course the World Anti-Communist League, as well as the Western Goals Foundation, both are Reverend Sun Myung-moon front groups that have received mass amount of funding. Reverend Moon and also the Western Goals Foundation were working intimately with the Korean CIA, the KCIA, during that time. And this is where a lot of the funding that the Reverend Moon was getting, and in turn, General Major John K. Singlib, who was a former highly decorated OSS officer, was a founding member of Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, along with other of his fellow Knights of Malta members, such as Wild Bill Donovan, Bill Casey, and the rest of them. These guys were all high-level sovereign military or Malta's members that were knighted in order to be able to operate and do whatever they needed to do under the guise of the Vatican anywhere in the world and be free of prosecution. So Larry McDonald was working on these operations under the guise of William Casey, former director of the CIA, with Major John K. Singlib. These were covert operations that were getting black op funding from the American people that was off the books. And so during that clip that you discussed there, where on Crossfire, that's in the film, Secret Right, mm-hmm. What's interesting about that is that you've got Tom Braden, former spook extraordinaire, high-level CFR mm-hmm. member, also a former CIA spook and total left-wing operative. So he was an easy play. And, of course, Tom Braden died about a month or two ago. And what's interesting about the death of Tom Braden was in the articles that came out during his death, Pat Buchanan was praising him and really mourning his loss and calling him a great friend and a wonderful friend. But you watch that clip there, as you mentioned, and there he is, degrading Tom Braden,
Right.
So you've got Tom Braden, then you've got Larry McDonald, and then you've got Pat Buchanan. And Pat Buchanan attempts to act like McDonald is somehow wrong about what he's talking about. And essentially what started happening was is that McDonald had worked in the CIA because he points out in that clip, he's like, well, that's your boss. You work for Bill Casey, blah, 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 blah. Well, you worked for him too, Larry McDonald. Let's tell the truth here. And you'll notice that he's sitting there going, you're a member of the CFR. You're a member of this. You need to ask so-and-so about, Philip Drew Administrator, blah, 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 blah. And the next thing you know, he's like, well, why don't you ask, is Pat a part of the conspiracy? Is Pat a part of the conspiracy? And he laughs. And he just goes, ha, 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 ha. And he won't ever touch it. Because, again, as they're sitting there, they were both current members at that time of the Council for National Policy, and both ensconced in the same ideology. So a lot of people are like, well, why did he go down in Korean Airliner? The fact of the matter is, because of his affiliation with the CIA, because of his workings with the Reverend Sun Myung-moon and the World Anti-Communist League, Larry McDonald had a high level of knowledge of where a lot of the funding was coming from, specifically from the Iran-Contra affair. He had worked mm-hmm. intimately with General Major John K. Singlib, who had trained the Contras. So if anybody was in the know as far as where the money was coming from, was being funneled through the Council on Inter-American Security, through the secretary and their directorate, which was Pat Buchanan and Larry Pratt. So see, Pat Buchanan also had a connection to the Contra stuff as well with Mr. McDonald. So if anybody was in a position to be able to put the finger on anybody more than anything, it was Larry McDonald. And of course, everybody says, okay, well, what was he doing on that Korean airliner 007? And I still believe that was some sort of a mark, 007 being the sigil of Dr. John Dee. But he allegedly went down and died in the Korean airliner. What was he doing on the Korean airliner? Well, what the Patriot movement's not going to tell you is that he was going to meet with the KCIA, the Korean Central Intelligence Agency, to talk about the current operations that were going on in South America to destabilize the governments down there during the Iran-Contra affair. So if he was killed for anything, he was killed because he had the knowledge to be able to finger Oliver North and others during the heart of that trial, and identify really where the funding was coming from. He wasn't killed because he was talking about the New World Order, folks. That's a front. That's a lie. But that's what the Patriot movement wants to believe in. Even I feel people in my chat room now saying that. But that's people, you got to understand that it's way deeper than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that, you know, the term even New World Order is thrown around as a psyop even to kind of acclimate us to it and to just get the idea so we can wrap our head around a one world governance in the back of our head, you know. I think everything is controlled. You know, what is CNN? Isn't that owned by Ted Turner? Who, you know,
sure.
I think the guy's a Knight Templar. So I would think anything that comes out on CNN or Fox, everything would have a purpose. Keywords get censored. You know, if we look at just what happened with the Glenn Beck kind of running his mouth a little bit and then getting snapped in line as far as the FEMA camps and the re-debunking after the unbunking of the FEMA, you know, I think all these things have a purpose. And that is just to slowly, like I've heard you say a couple times, just to turn up the heat in the on the pot of water that the frog's in. You know, it's now we're made aware of it, and slowly they're just going to keep on turning up the heat until we just wake up one day and we're in a Hitler-esque totalitarian one-world governance. I don't really see there being a big battle. I see minor, maybe little skirmishes with militia members and whatever maybe coming up on the horizon. But I think en masse, I think a lot of us are just going to be slowly indoctrinated into the system. And if we don't, you know, if gentlemen like yourself, are successful in really illuminating people as far as what is happening and what we can do, I think that's the only way to snap out of this. And I know you've seen me flip-flop on the issue a couple times, and sometimes it just seems that it's unavoidable, this governance which is coming. And I think that, you know, the only way that we have a chance of, you know, squirming out of this totalitarian state is just by letting people know who it is, what it's for, how they're going to do it, and, you know, the purpose of all these little psyops which are going on. What did you think about that, Mr. Reed?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the main thing about it, and I've come to that conclusion myself, is that most of this stuff that you know, the Patriot Movement or anybody in general is, quote-unquote, warning people about is stuff that is in many ways already here at the North American Union. That's already here. Colin Powell is actually in Lima, Peru, signing us into the South American Treaty on September 11, 2001, coincidentally enough, on the day of, and anybody that wants to check out that information, myself and Michael Vail wrote an article last year. You can type NAU brought in under, ushered in under smokescreen of 9/11, and that article will come up on Google. You can find that. And, yeah, he was signing us into that. We're watching airplanes fly into buildings. He's signing us into the South American treaties, which effectively was the full-blown culmination of the merging of the three countries. But I think that yeah, it does have a lot to do with acclimating people to it. But I think more than anything, what it is that they want to get people up in arms. They want to get people finding about things that they know are already coming and already much in very many ways here. And the reason that they want to do that, Everett, is because they want to identify who the troublemakers are going to be under the new system that they already know is coming into place. Again, these people are patient. I mean, these are like hunters. If anybody is familiar with hunters and snipers, hunters are patient. You know, they will wait for the proper time to strike, to get their kill. And that's what these guys do. They're willing to take generations. They're willing. That's another one of the very strange anomalies about the elite, is how, you know, they're willing to go their whole lives without seeing the culmination of the plan, because they know that the next in line below them is going to 100% operate within the same realms and under the same guidelines that they did. So I think that what they're trying to do at this level, what they've been trying to do for a long time, at least over the past 20 years, is they're trying to, A, identify who the troublemakers would be, who are going to be the people that aren't going to go along with global government, so we can start identifying these people and create a situation where we can identify the troublemakers, be it through armed conflict or creating movements and getting people to sign up on lists, getting people to buy DVDs from certain radio hosts and things like that. All those things put your name on a list, my friends. Once you buy a DVD from anybody, your name is on a list. That's just the bottom line of it, especially through an operation that has shady front groups of it, like Magnolia Management. If you want to do a little bit of research, go look at Alex Jones' company, parent company that does all his stuff through. It's through a company called Magnolia Management. I've done extensive research into this company, and it's a dead end. It leads to nothing. It looks like a front organization. So My question is where's this information going, the purchase you make through his organization? I don't know. I do have to say the main thing about it is, Everett, is that they want to identify us and they want to know who we are, so they can get the troublemakers out of the way.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And it kind of reminds me of something I saw Jim Mars talk about briefly. It's kind of like the old school communist plan, the 50-year, the 10, 20, and 50-year plans. And I definitely feel that we're in the latter half or in the beginning half of a 20-year or 50-year plan. This stuff might not even actualize itself for another 20 years or so. But, it's kind of like, they're dropping the heat on right now, and then it's going to rescind back a little bit, and the heat will die down. But the idea will still be in the back of your head, kind of like what Jim Mars says, they take two steps forward, one step back, two step forwards, and one step back. And it looks like it's paying off for Russia, because now Russia is coming to the forefront a little bit again as far as being a world power. And it looks like that's by design. So, yeah, I definitely would agree with you with what you're saying about them biding their time and setting up the long-term goals. I definitely see them doing that. And it seems to me that this is a millennia-long goal that's actualizing itself now through the new technology, which is out. We were talking real briefly about last week. I'm not sure what it's called. I have the article here somewhere about the new global cell phone plan. And for me, in my head, the technology it's going to take to do that would have to incorporate all the communication satellites right now as we speak. So which would lead me to believe if a communication network is linked up with all the other communication satellites, that would have to have governmental oversight, which would mean, in a way, that every cell phone now is suspect, whereas before it seemed like Nextel, Verizon, Sprint, a couple of the big ones were definitely working with the government, but now it seems anything you talk on has oversight, probably goes through NSA servers, keyword, biorhythmic type stuff going on. I believe a lot of that is the future as far as all that. Now, okay, we're going to go ahead and head into a break, and I'd like to remind my guest, Mr. Josh Reeves, the volume on your phone your phone is still going to be on while we're on this break. So if you could hold up back from coughing and stuff, I would appreciate it. And right now we're going to get into a little atmosphere. We're going to be gone for about 4.5 minutes here. A little atmosphere, Denver, Colorado.
Good evening, anybody who ever been to Colorado.
Warm welcome,
more importantly, Denver.
Cut me loose, bury me, and piss on the ground. Yeah, but what's over,
All right, we're back, everybody. Josh, you still on the air with us? Mr. Josh Reeves. Okay, we may have lost Josh. Can you all hear me out there? Am I still live? I'm not hearing anything in regards of feedback on my phone like I was earlier in regards to static. If we are still live, and hopefully the chat will pipe up, I'm going to go ahead and drop a query in there. Josh, if you got disconnected, it shows you're still on here on the switchboard.
Yeah, I'm here with you.
Oh, okay. Great, great. Now, before the break, we had got into the CNP, who they are, how they operate, and I wanted to get into a little bit in regards to Sun Myung-moon and Tim LaHaye. And Ma Justice had thrown me a tidbit that it seems like the both of those people had the same money guy backing them. So I wanted to know a little bit more because I do not know a lot about the Reverend Sun Myung-moon, where you might speculate some of his money comes from and how that relates to Tim LaHaye. And who is Tim LaHaye, where he came from, and how did he have the power to start this CNP anyways?
Well, certainly – let's start with Sun Myung-moon first. He's a very mysterious character, somebody who came out of the Korean Central Intelligence Agency. That's really where he came from. He's also a Sovereign Military Order of Malta, high-level Sovereign Military Order of Malta member. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation on him. There's a lot of speculation on him. A lot of people believe the guy is, he's some sort of incarnate demon. A lot of people do believe that. I don't know. But the main thing about it is that he did get his funding from the Japanese Yakuza gangs, the cocaine import trade, the opium heroin trade out of Asia. Again, the Korean Central Intelligence Agency that was working hand-in-hand with our government. And essentially, if you go back and you study cults, and you really get down to the root of cults, all mainstream cults that have ever been out there from Jonestown to Charlie Manson, I mean, you can go into all this stuff. In the end, you always find tentacles back to the CIA, back to the Central Intelligence Agency. And one of the things about in the 1970s, you know, you had those really when the Moonies exploded. There's a great Saturday Night Live clip out there with John Belushi, where Tom Belushi's doing an impersonation of the Reverend Sun Myung-moon, and Dan Aykroyd, and I think it's like Elaine Boozler or something like that, or like play this couple, and their kid got abducted and brainwashed by the Moonies, and they're like, he's like, oh, I'm the Reverend Moon, I take your daughters, and we take them and pay them in my cup. Yeah, because he really does talk like that. He's just a demon dwarf, but this is one clip where he's talking about the female sexual organs and the male sexual organs are concave, and he's just ridiculous. This guy was called a cult leader. You know, people. There's actually amazing. There's so much footage. I'm actually thinking about in the future. I'm thinking about making Cedar Wright too, and I'm actually thinking about making a film just on Reverend Sun Myung-moon alone, because there's so much footage in the archives. And the news archives that we could have bought, but we didn't, on this guy pertained to, especially in the 1970s, where families were taking their kids to these deprogramming camps. You know, they would have them out selling flowers and stuff. And this was an operation to basically build up a bunch of money. And then the next thing you know, in the 1980s come around, after Jerry Falwell and all these people had called him a cult member, the next thing you know, here's Jerry Falwell taking millions of dollars from him. Here's, as you mentioned, Tim LaHaye's wife, Beverly LaHaye, Concerned Women for America, taking money from him. The Reagan Justice Department sends him up the river for tax evasion. The next thing you know, he gets out. He buys the Washington Times, and then Reagan's calling it the most conservative newspaper, praising him. So essentially what you – I actually have a picture in my film of him shaking hands with Nixon in the Oval Office in the 1970s. Now, that is a very key picture for those of you that know what's going on. I can't believe I haven't had more people look at that picture in my film and point that out and go, my goodness, that's an amazing picture. Just goes to show you how much people don't know about this guy, don't know about the CMP. But, you know, you got to understand, folks, during the 1970s when Nixon was in office, Moon one was, this guy was not an accepted figure. He was considered an evil cult member and was persona non grata to, not only the general public, but to the government and figureheads at large. And for us to have a picture of him in the Oval Office with Nixon during the Nixon administration, shaking hands with him, is just an unbelievable picture, because it goes to show you that our CIA and our government was working in tandem with this guy long before he was ever an accepted figurehead in Washington. This guy is the confirmed, and this is all confirmable stuff, the confirmed biggest funder of the Republican Party for going on 30 years. That means, yes, ladies and gentlemen, probably Ron Paul as well has probably taken money from this guy. Everybody in the who is a Republican has taken money from this guy at some point. He's funded everything and everybody, from the CMP to the Heritage Foundation to the World Anti-Communist League to the Contras. You name it, he's funded it. And that is another question. He also calls himself the Messiah. He says he is the King of Peace, and he says that he has succeeded where Jesus has failed. And all these people, this is really the crux of why people get scared when you start talking about the CMP, because they don't want you to know the connections back, and they don't want you tying that back to Moon. They know as soon as people figure out, folks, that all your Republicans and all your patriot people have tentacles back to this Sun and Moon character, their little Christian little world where, oh, we're all Christians, and Alex Jones gone on his radio, I'm a Christian, yeah, I'm a Christian, yeah, that's what I am, I'm a Christian, I'm Alex Jones, I'm a Christian, send me some money, support my ministry, Fox, look, I don't have to tell you I'm taking money from Sun Yat-sen, okay? I don't want to tell you that, Fox, but I am. I'm taking money from him, and the bottom line is he's funding my money bomb, okay? But no, that'd be great. But seriously, I think that one of the things that people overlook about this guy is that, not only his connections to the mafia, his connections to the Korean CIA, the fact that he calls himself the King of Peace. He also claims he has a spirit world device that he created that allows him to communicate into the spirit world. And he claims that he's contacted Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Adolf Hitler and Stalin and all these people who have claimed him and told people that he is the Messiah, and they have reformed themselves through his teachings. And all this other stuff. He also controls 90% of the sushi trade into the United States, as well as being the owner of the Washington Times. But going back to what you mentioned about Tim LaHaye is an interesting character because this guy, if you've never seen a picture of Tim LaHaye, folks, go to Google Images right now, Google Tim LaHaye, look him up. The guy is literally a freaking demon, no doubt about it. He literally looks like a demon, doesn't he, Everett?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, and he's got that kind of smirk on his face where it's definitely, and you have a great clip in The Secret Rites as far as him talking about the Bible code and getting into all of that, and as far as his crown and cross, which is a symbol for, is it that the Rosicrucians? What is the crown and cross? What does that signify?
The Templars.
The Templars. Oh, I see. So that is that's very interesting. And I've seen, in listening to Freeman, I've heard Freeman discussing Tim LaHaye meeting up with Cheney in private meetings. And I wonder what that has to do with the CFR, and how do these groups intercommunicate? For instance, what is the purpose of the CFR versus the CNT? Are they do they have the same goal, and are they just reaching out to other types of members? For instance, I know that Bush and Cheney and a lot of high-ups, and I believe Michelle Obama, I don't know. I haven't seen anything that clarified that as far as her being a CFR. But what are the purpose of these two groups, which seemingly have the same purpose, and why is this? Is it just that the CFR has become too mainstream now for too long to where they needed a CMP to actually serve the purpose privately, what the CFR seems to be doing outright?
Well, not really, and Cheney and Bush, I don't think are CFR. They're definitely both CMP members. But no, basically what it has is, if you go back and you study the groups, you got to go back about 100 years ago, back to the Fabian Socialist Movement, back to the Milner Roundtables and the London School of Economics. You got to go back to the roots of the Fabian Socialist Movement, and you'll find out that with people like Edward Mandel House, who was the father or the Council for the Council on Foreign Relations. This guy, he was also operating on behalf of the the Rhodes, Milner Rhodes roundtables, the roundtable groups that were had funding from the Rothschilds via the Vatican and were attempting to set up a world socialist world government. And you go back to that, and you go then you have that formations, and then you go on through the formation of the League of Nations after World War II when they first tried to get global government in, then into the UN, then the Korean War, and the Korean War was an attempt to, that was a depopulation and in really an attempt to bring North Korea and South Korea and divide them as to later as a pretext to see what we're going on now, which is to unify both of those countries into one and bring them under the guise of global government. So eventually, when you get up after World War II and after the UN and whatnot, you get about to about 1959 is when you had the John Birch Society forming. Coincidentally enough, one of the first people to come along when he moved to San Diego, California in 1959, the same year that coincidentally enough the John Birch Society was formed, was none other than our friend, good friend, the Reverend Tim LaHaye. And he started out in 1959, one of the first year that they started out. And here comes Tim LaHaye, and he's talking about the Illuminati. He's talking about the UN setting up global government. He just becomes a major figurehead in the John Birch Society and subsequently sets up his church and his ministry there in San Diego, in the exact city that later on became the hotbed and the launching point for where all of the power behind Reagan came from. So really, the formation in 1959 of the John Birch Society and Tim LaHaye's involvement, that's what solidified his establishment as being a hardcore person who really was being brought in to start bringing the right. If you got to remember back in the late 1950s, 1960s, and whatnot, the predominant party was the Democrat Party. You know, the Democrat and Republican parties back then were radically different than they are now. I mean, these parties were had totally different mindsets, totally different views, and they were totally and completely different than people. Because like my grandparents and whatnot were Democrats back then. Now, the couple of grandparents I have left, now they're Republicans. But back then, everybody was a Democrat because the Democrats were considered the more, sort of hardcore Republican type of party.
Yeah, I've heard that a bunch of times. That there seems to have been a flip-flop of the parties, and I wonder what purpose that serves.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Getting to that right now. That's what I was trying to get to was going back to, of course, the Fabian Socialist and Milner Roundtable movement in 1959 when you had John Birch Society start, and you had Tim LaHaye and the rest of those come out to start that group. What they started figuring out is that after about 1959 and on up to in the 1960s, right to the start of the Vietnam War, and this is years of the research, folks, here. It's hard to wrap your mind around a lot about this stuff. But what they started figuring out was that people were starting to wake up to it. People were starting to wake up to global government. People were starting to wake up to the New World Order. People were starting to figure out where the control was. So they had to start having organizations and groups that would essentially be gatekeepers and would keep people in a state of telling them, yes, there's a New World Order, as you and I mentioned earlier. Yes, there's a New World, yes, this is real, but it's these groups like the CFR and whatnot and Jewish bankers and whatnot that are involved in it, therefore keeping people from ever looking at the priest class or the Jesuits or the Knights of Malta or the Vatican or any of this stuff and ever finding out about, where the true control was. They've always been a scapegoat from the very beginning. So what you had was when these parties began to shift and the power began to shift around, the reason why that was and the reason why these groups like the Council for National Public was started, you have to go back and you have to study people like Roger Pearson, the head of the Eugenics Fund that was brought over here by Willis Carto of the Liberty Lobby. And essentially what they had to do was they had to find a way, because the world socialist system that these guys were arguing about bringing in, they were having arguments about, you had people like I mentioned earlier, with Edward Mandel House, who said, look, people aren't ready for this. People aren't going to be able to handle this. We got to figure out some way to do this and keep this a secret. Otherwise, there's no way in hell we're going to get this achieved. Then you have people in the 1960s like Carroll Quigley out of Georgetown saying, no, we just need to be open about this. Screw it. Screw these people. They can't stop us anyway. We've had this plan going on for the better part of 60 years in the 20th century, from the beginning of the early 1900s till now. So why even pull punches on this? Let's just get it out there. So what they had to do after the right started having power, and specifically after the Watergate stuff, was they had to figure out a way to where they could bring in socialism on both the left and the right and get the people of the country to willfully go along with socialism. That's what the Council for National Policy's real crux was getting people to, willfully go for socialism, no matter who they voted for on the left or the right.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now, I understand how it worked and everything as far as the Hunt brothers, which I believe are H.L. Hunt and Edmund Bunker Hunt, unless I'm mistaken. Now, where did they fit in as far as eugenics and funding eugenics projects? And what is the purpose of eugenics as far as the New World Order, the new totalitarian government, which is brought to us exclusively by the priest class? What is the point of – because it seems like through these eugenics, the combination of chemicals they're using, and Maude just threw a factoid at me, only 2 out of 10 people in America, males, college-age males, sperm is any good anymore, or I think it's called motable sperm, where, their sperm is actually functional. What is the point of sterilizing their perceived great race? It seems like the only thing they're concerned with is the 13 bloodlines, and even other people of their perceived great race, they're targeting with this eugenics too. So I wonder, what is the point?
Well, sure, and you sort of are asking multiple faceted questions, so which is good. I like that, but I'm going to have to address them one at a time. Number one, the Hunt Oil Brothers their father actually was H.L. Hunt. And the father, H.L. Hunt, and then the two sons, you had Herbert Hunt, Nelson Bunker Hunt, and Lamar Hunt, who was the founder of the American Football League, along with, really was the creator. He was also the creator of the Super Bowl. And essentially what you had is these guys at that time were, they had their tentacles and their funding and everything. If you go back to Nelson Bunker Hunt, who was the Sovereign Military Order in Malta, and then later his sons were. This is the guy that paid for the wanted for treason posters for JFK that were put in here in Dallas, Texas on November 21st, 1963, the day before Kennedy was assassinated here. And they basically, if you go and look at those posters and dig that up on Google Images, it reads like a communist, anti-communist manifesto of the John Birch Society at the time. And of course, he was also a high-level John Birch Society guy, as were a lot of the people that were involved and fingered in the Kennedy assassination. A lot of these guys were Knights of Malta as well, from Clay Shaw to Alan Dulles to H.L. Hunt to on and on and on. And all these guys were high-level SMOM. And so essentially what you had is that they were funding the John Birch Society. They were funding putting all sorts of money into that. They were also funding this group called the National Center for Ethnology and Eugenics, based out of Edinburgh, Scotland, which coincidentally enough is where the Knights Templar fled and set up Scottish Rite of Freemasonry at. And this is where you get into the British race scientists and this idea of creating – this is the whole thing of eugenics is what they've been trying to do. Again, you're 100% correct. People think that just because I'm white or you're white or somebody else is white, that means that somehow when eugenics comes down the line, we're free of that. And I got to tell you, that's absolutely not the case. They don't give a damn about us. This is not about us, and it's not about skin color. This is about individual genomes, the DNA code. This is what all this data mining for information is for. They only want to have people that they deem are of a specific bloodline and specific DNA makeup that goes back to the creators, and it's really even deeper and darker. Now, I don't think I have time to go into how deep it is, and really how sinister the whole DNA thing is, and what it really boils down to. I've talked about it on my show, and it'll be in the volume 2 of The Secret Right. But what the main thing about it is, Everett, is that the reason they put so much money into this is because a lot of this stuff's going to be in volume 2. Going back to the bloodline, studying why that is, they believe that a lot of these other races are genetically inferior, and that essentially, because of the new coming, socialized welfare system, it's being brought in under Barack Obama, where everyone is a ward of the nanny state. That's what people don't understand. This nanny state he's coming in under Barack Obama, is people walking right into their own doom. Because essentially, once it gets to be too much of a tab for the New World Order to have to pay for the socialized medicine, they're just going to start rolling out race-specific bioweapons. So they want the planet to themselves. They want it for their specific bloodlines. And this is what the whole plan has been about. And it's, you know, it's amazing that, and when you go to the highest levels of the Knights of Malta, the highest levels of the secret societies, and the highest levels of the oil and money industry, you always find these guys that are putting mass amounts of money into depopulation programs, into Planned Parenthood, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, into all this stuff. These guys are at the highest levels of depopulation. That's the whole thing. We factor in as long, so long as we're helping achieve them the great work. Once they get so far along, they're not going to need us anymore. That's when you're going to start seeing massive depopulation. So, but it is, you're right. It does go back to the fact that they only want certain specific bloodline people to rule the planet, and everybody else is going to have to die.
Yeah, so there, it almost seems, in effect, that they're trying to create 13 Noahs or 13 bloodlines in which to repopulate, and those are chosen. So I wonder where that originates from. I wonder where these bloodlines came from, and what does it signify? Now, it seems to me, which you've gotten into your show a little bit, that it's the demagogue bloodlines, like maybe the Caucasoid race left by the Enki and Enlil and the in the Sumerian epics. And, you know, as everything that I've seen, it all goes back to Sumeria. And a lot of the stuff, a lot of the religious allegories, a lot of everything, it all seems to be, it's based on the Sumeria epic. And the tablets of Thoth and all that, and Enki and Enlil and Gilgamesh, it seems to be that was the main blue line or blueprint for a lot of the religious stories and allegories which came after that are all based on that. And it seems to me that if you study that stuff a little bit, you kind of get a better idea as far as who these races are, you know, and why they're here now. You know, the secret right doesn't get into a lot of this, but, you know, you do get into some of this info on your show. And it seems to me that these races are the same thing, kind of like how, I don't know how many out of these, the 45 current presidents or presidents we've had, I believe off the top of my head, 30-plus have been directly related to English nobility. None of the English nobility, the Windsor family, et cetera, a lot of them claim to be descended from the Caesars, which claim to be descended from the Pharaohs, which was a progression of the Sumerian, Egypt being a progression of the Sumerian culture. So that seems to me to be where we get these bloodlines from, and I was wondering if you could add something to that real briefly in regards to that.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's the old adage of, you know, all roads lead to Rome. And then once you get to Rome, all roads lead to Sumer. And then once you get to Sumer, all roads lead to Sirius after that. So all very interconnected. And that is the main thing about it. I'm going to get into some of this in Volume 2 to see it right. This is about a specific bloodline that the demigods, the ones that were put in positions of kingship and were made with the most DNA of the gods. And they represent the closest form of living gods on this planet. And that's one of the things, that's why they have maintained their bloodlines. That's why there's been a strict interbreeding program throughout the centuries. You can go back to, you can go back to King Darius in Iran. This is one of the most important things, why they're going into Iran and why they want to regain Iran. The original Iranian people were not were not Persians, ladies and gentlemen. They were Aryans. Iran means Aryan. Those of you don't know that. And it was white-skinned people that used to inhabit Iran.
The Celts being an example of which, right?
What's that?
I said the Celts were an example of which, you know, the Celts fled from Aryan Viejo and went up to Scotland. So I think, yeah, a lot of people are very misinformed about the original denizens of Iran. You know, they were, you know, white-skinned people.
Sure. And you've got the Behistun inscription, the Behistun rock there in Iran. That's on the big wall there that depicts, of course, King Darius, the winged disc of Horus. And it's got this inscription at the bottom of this giant rock on the giant wall that says this is inscribed by Queen Semiramis. And it says, all my bloodline descendants of me, Darius the Great, will rule over these 23 lands, and they have these weird names, and you go and check out what the 23 lands are now, and it's all the areas of the Middle East. It's Israel, it's Iran, it's Iraq, it's Saudi Arabia, it's Pakistan. It's all the areas of the Middle East where, lo and behold, all the oil happens to be. And that's interesting that King Darius, who, of course, George W. Bush and all the rest of these cronies are descended from, would have had the foresight 4,000 or 5,000 years ago to say all my descendants would come from this land also. King Darius also defeated Babylon, conquered Babylon, and defeated none other than King Nebuchadnezzar. And he also, at that time, crucified King Nebuchadnezzar, and along with 3,000 Babylonians. Now, isn't that an interesting correlation, considering Bush being the descendant of none other than King Darius? And here we have Saddam Hussein saying that he was the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar. And also we have us, you know, we got him, going to get him, and then 3,000 dead on 9/11. So strange correlation, 3,000 dead on 9/11, 3,000 Babylonians crucified by Darius. I don't think that's a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. And you got to go back to it all boils down to one thing. In 2002, Saddam Hussein was in the process of setting up a library containing cylinder seals and tablets from the Sumerian civilization. Allegedly depicted in these cylinder seals was information to prove the bloodlines and to prove that the Jews, once and for all, were not the true Semites and not the true God-chosen people. Remember, in the Bible, it says Jesus was a Semite. It never says he was a Jew, but Christians will tell you that Jesus was a Jew. It never said he was a Jew. It said Jesus was a Semite, and a Semite is not the same as a Jew, because the modern-day Jews that practice Judaism, it came out of the the Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud, and then, of course, with the Canaanites and whatnot, these were not the true Jews. You had, according to the story goes, is that the ancient people and the ancient people that inhabited what is now Iraq, that came from the Sumerian civilization, Akkadian, then Sumeria, then Assyria, and then Babylonian, and then Egypt. These are the true Semites. He was getting ready to reveal this for the world, and just about the process of having that open in 2002, when, boom, the shift goes from, we're not going after bin Laden, we're going to go after Saddam Hussein first, because he has weapons of mass destruction, and he was plotting this with him. All of a sudden, we got to go get him, all right. First thing they do, they go blow the doors off the Iraq National Museum. They go in, they take all the cylinder seals, they take all the tablets, they take all the statues, they take everything. So that was that's the whole point, and that's what we're going to get into in Volume 2 as well. This is about the priest class. This is about religion. This is about who has the bloodline right to rule this planet. And they are cheating. They are cheating their way to victory, because they have the funding, they have the money, and they control religions, they control the secret knowledge, and they are cheating their way to victory. The Council for National Policy is in Wisconsin. This is how they set the policy for these events to happen in this country. This is how they get the churches behind it. This is how they get the military-industrial complex behind it. This is how they get the soldiers behind it. They get them believing they're fighting for Christianity, that these are the bad guys, that the Jews are the true chosen people. Meanwhile, what's going on is an absolute genocide against the people who are the true bloodline descendants, who are the true chosen ones, who are the true God's chosen people. And these are the people that are supposed to rule over these lands and are supposed to rule this planet. But these usurpers and these people who believe that they are bigger than everybody else are lying to the entire planet and going committing genocide on the behalf of the priest class so that everybody doesn't find this out. And by God, we're going to make sure everybody finds out. If I have anything to do with it, we are. That's my goal. That's why I want to expose the priest class and exposing the Council for National Policy. And the fact that the whole Patriot movement and all this crap is set up to get you from ever keeping you from ever finding out. Don't you understand this is why they tell you that the Jews run everything, folks? This is the real truth that they don't want you to know about.
Yeah, no, I would agree wholeheartedly. And it seems to me that the whole Patriot movement is to get you to accept or get you to go back to phase one. You know, they're trying to get us to reset the board game versus coming up with a new board game. And if I hear one more people talk about one more person talk about the Constitution, I'm going to snap. Like you get into on your show, you know, the Constitution was not written for us. It was written for wealthy white landowners. And And as I understand it, the Constitution isn't even valid. The Corporation of America is done. It went bankrupt in like the 1700s, the early 1800s. It's done. It's never been around. I mean, that paper is entirely useless. Not only that, but the Bill of Rights is copyrighted, and I'm not even allowed to use it to defend myself, and it doesn't even apply to me, being that I've given away my sovereignty and become a 14th Amendment citizen by registering to vote, by my parents signing over a Social Security card for me and signing over my commercial ID over to the government. They definitely want to keep us in a nationalistic paradigm to keep us fighting a useless battle and to keep us from realizing the globalism which is going on. So it's just, you know, that's what they're doing in mass. And, you know, a lot of the people who were set up to be our heroes, i.e., I don't know, say Ron Paul, want us to go into state succession and are trying to get us to redo the Constitution to focus on the Constitution again. So let's say we focus on the Constitution, there's going to be no gain there because that doesn't even apply to us, you know, the normal 14th Amendment citizens. And then what's the other option, you know? Are you going to go sovereign and be a man on the land in the corporation of whatever republic you live in? Well, those people are being rounded up as domestic terrorists. So, you know, that's definitely a dead end. And it would seem to me, and one of the reasons I really, really enjoy your show, Josh, is you are not afraid to get into the esoteric knowledge of Sirius and the other stuff. During the last week, you've been discussing, I believe his name is Noel Huntley, and the different types of DNA and I believe it's – I wonder if you could speak on that a little bit about what you've been getting into as far as Noel Huntley, because that seems to me to correlate with the demagogue DNA. And why they may be doing the things that they're doing as far as the latent powers in the DNA and how reincarnation might add and the activation of the 12-strand DNA. Could you speak on that real
quickly? Well, sure. Yeah, and that's exactly what it has to do with. Ever, you're right. It has to do with the fact that what they're attempting to do is to keep us from being higher versions of ourselves and from ascending up to different realms around. That's one of the other main tricks of the priest class. In whether the priest class is up here, then you have things like science on one end there, which are just trickle down versions of it. Then you have religion, which is trickle down versions of it. Then they pit the two against each other in this phony battle of science versus religion. When the reality of it is that what they don't want you to know is that well beyond the spectrum of what we are able to comprehend and to see in normal everyday waking life with our five-sense reality computer and biological system, and that's very limited. But this is why going back to Eastern religions and going back to Buddhism and Taoism and the rest of this stuff where, it's constantly the searching for the inner light and the searching for inside, the inner light being met through meditation, DMT release, and then ascending to higher planes of existence and not having to return to this plane of samsara. Now, this is why, and believe me, I don't know if this is probably going to be a shock. There's been many times in my life where I've considered shaving my head and going and joining a Buddhist monastery and just going and doing that for the rest of my life and never looking back because it really is the highest form of things that you can do that I've found in this life and this reality. What it entails is that your entire existence revolves around in this very limited and temporary physical body and plane. Your entire life is dedicated towards not having to come back. Entire existence is dedicated towards reaching enlightenment, reaching nirvana, and never having to come back to this realm and this plane. So this is what they want. This is why there's such a focus put on the five, like the old Bill Hicks skit, look at my furrows of work. We got a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up, you know. And that's exactly what it is. They want you to believe that this ride is reality and this is all that's real. And they don't want you to know about the other levels and other planes of existence where they don't have control. They control the physical plane. They don't control the non-material and other planes, four-dimensional reality, five-dimensional reality. One of the things that we know, Huntley information is the possibility of the Earth having these various is the Earth in itself being a giant portal center, and basically this is why ancient why there's been throughout this planet littered, you know, from iconography, from as we talked about earlier, from iconography to the Nazca lines, to Easter Island, to the pyramids, to Stonehenge, all these stuff built on ley lines. This has been one of the constant belief systems, is that essentially what you have, there have been many, many visitors and many, many people here from many other places throughout this planet because of the portal system that enables people to go through other dimensions and to basically jump through various dimensions of existence and links of time and space through these portals. It also talks about how the third eye is the portal to Sirius, and how the pineal gland basically connects and connects to the third eye and connects to the physical plane. And this is how the souls incarnate into the material realm. But one of the things that I think is interesting is that you mentioned 12-strand DNA activation. And that's one of the things that I see more and more, is that all reality is electromagnetic in nature. And it doesn't take much to essentially manipulate that. So I think that through the calcification of the pineal gland with the sodium and the water and the rest of this stuff, I personally believe that we are destined to become 12-strand DNA-activated beings, which would essentially make us light beings. I do believe this is what the Mayans were talking about when they said that it would be the end of one world and the beginning of another one. And I think that through science and through technology, that they are systematically right now keeping both this planet and our body from going through whatever change is coming down the years. I don't believe there's going to be the end of the world. I don't believe the world's going to blow up. That's what people all say. Well, I think it's ain't nothing going to happen on 2012. It ain't going to be no Nibiru. It ain't going to be no 12-strand DNA. It ain't going to be jack diddly squat. It's just going to be like Y2K, and ain't nothing's going to happen. Well, if they get their way, Everett, and they succeed, that's exactly what's going to happen. That's what they're trying to get to happen. This is why they're putting out all this pole shift crap and all this, big flood crap and this new big crap and this end of the world stuff. And then the Christians are saying this is when the Lord's going to return. They're all going to be raptured out. But this is why they're doing all that, is because they don't want people finding the real truth about what it is and getting down to the real deal of figuring out, what we're capable of. I think wholeheartedly that if they succeed, nothing will happen on 2012, and the world will continue business as usual. And I'm telling you right now, if that does, that's when we're going to know we're really screwed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that a lot of this may be, I think they're doing an extremely good job as far as what their goal is and keeping us from the esoteric knowledge of what we are and, the Higgs-Boson particles and, the power in which our pineal gland has. And I think, the fluoridation in the water is just in a direct assault on our pineal gland and calcifying it in order to keep us from shifting or realizing what's going on. Because it seems to me, for whatever reason, is, as much as I get into the politics and I get drawn into a lot of that, but it seems to me that all earthly politics are just a show and it's a distraction to keep us from looking skyward. And that's really where, that's where the struggle is, because we live this day-to-day life. We're constantly struck with this 3D matter and tables and TVs and this world around us, seemingly put there just to, movie dressing, just sets, just to keep us stuck in this three-dimensional paradigm. When you look up in the sky, I don't know how many stars there are. I don't know how many 100 trillion star systems are out there. But it just seems inconceivable to me that there are not other civilizations out there which have had a hand in our development. And as far as the pineal gland, that does seem to me to be key to a lot of the stuff that's out there. Like you said, the Noel Huntley stuff, really, that you got into in the last week as far as the different the portals in the earth and the five different key races and a lot of stuff, it really gets into a lot of the same stuff that we keep seeing over and over again. And it's just basically, we are meant to be more than what we are here. You know, we are sold this whole thing that we are just, you know, evolved monkeys that have no higher purpose other than to like material things and to go shopping. And, you know, I think if people just wake up to the reality and look inwardly, kind of like a Buddhist monk, and I definitely had the type of, when I first woke into this, thing, that's the first place I clamored to, or that's the first conclusion I reached is, man, I just need to go somewhere and look inward, because that's the only place that, you know, you're really going to find answers, because no matter where you look, it's always kind of tainted, and they've done a clever job in every different type of field that you can look into. The most popular cat in each field, i.e. Your counterpart being, let's say, Alex Jones, there's someone there to lure you away from the real truth. And that's why I really, really enjoy your show, Josh, is because you get into, which is the global reality, which you can find at www.oraclebroadcasting.com. You're there from 11 p.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, in my time. And you get into everything from the esoteric to the dimensional, the 12-strand DNA stuff, to Sirius, the Sirius trilogy star system, and a lot of the stuff that I'm kind of researching on my own, it's there for me. And plus, you don't go into the left, right, false paradigm stuff. You're not hung up on one group like the CFR, the Bilderberg, or whatever. I you know, I have a lot of respect for you, and I really, really enjoy the show. And I really recommend that a lot of people check you out, man. And well, on that note, we are going to go ahead and go to another song. We're going to take a little break here. Let me look into something here. Now we're going to get into a little bit of Nas talking about We're Not Alone. And yes, there's a little propaganda in this song, which is why I'm playing it. All right, people. Hope you enjoyed this. Me and Josh Reeves will be back in about 4 or so minutes.
To God. Searching for the truth is a threat. Seems the closer we get to the truth, state troopers offend. Come out to silence you. My house in Malibu, probably tapped, cause living next door to Demi Moore. Plus I'm black, plus I want vengeance for the poor who's attacked daily. Patriot Act never scared me. Jake in the Taurus, sticky in the Jarvis. Niggas I'm with got warrants. America's browning. 20 years from now, every town will be brown in Latin. An African look in Manhattan. I'ma tell you what I seen with my three eyes. Word to me, not a hoax back in 99. A spacecraft in the skyline. In LA in daytime, axe horse if I'm lying.
Every mother, every father, raise your sons and your daughters with respect and with honor. From the seed comes the fruit. It's an unbroken circle. All of life is universal, and we're all in the struggle. If I know one thing is true.
Evidence remains in debate. Documents of our own Air Force base. Additional terrestrial information. Other planets with life population. My observation. Scientists study pictures of a flying disc. Writer Earth anthropologists are finding shit. Visitors probably live at us. They can mimic us. It's sort of what we're seeing in the cinemas.
Take a look in the mirror and see the bigger picture. It's good to be alive. It's good to be alive. Nobody is an island. We are part of an environment. Only way we gon' survive is if we harm.
Reginald Lewis, the black billionaire before Oprah, Bob Johnson. How'd he disappear? Conspiracy theories, UFOs in the air. I seen it with my own two eyes, and I swear, like Warren Buffett. Real money, I'm just trying to touch it. The diamond and crush this shit, live illustrious. Cause we was deprived of it, suffered. Now we pop to prove anything's possible. My pimp strut was invented when they whipped us. Now we diddy bop just to show you that our strength's up. Just when niggas about to see they cut, global warming about to burn us up. Niggas never really seen paper in this world. American Black's the teenager of this world. Give us 20 more years to grow up, already geniuses. What I mean is this. I used to worship a certain Queens police murderer till I read the words of Ivan Van Sertima. He inserted something in me that made me feel worthier. Now I spit revolution, I'm his hood interpreter.
Take a look in the mirror and see the bigger picture. It's good to be alive. It's good to be alive. Nobody is an island. We are part of an environment. Only way we gon' survive is if we harmonize.
Yo, I'm American born, love America, love my people, love all mankind, all nationalities, you know. I think it's just been recent where everybody started to feel like there was an elite group that runs everything, and everybody else was sheep, ignorant, making all ethnicities, colors, and creeds niggas, blind to what's really going on. So I say take off the wool from your eyes. Out with the old America, in with the new. End all racism, all injustice, all oppression to poor people, anywhere on this planet. Let's come together. A new day's rising.
All right, everybody, we're back. It's Mystic Politics Radio. I'm really, really enjoying the show tonight with man I respect a lot by the name of Josh Reeves, very, very knowledgeable. He's got almost 20 years experience in researching esoteric stuff along with the geopolitical spectrum and the ties into the secret societies, i.e. the Sovereign Muslim Order of Malta, the Jesuits, the CNP, and their ties into the preclass. And he had played a really sharp movie for me over on Justin TV / Global Reality in regards to the New Atlantis and a lot of the goals for America, i.e. the Rosicrucians and John Dee and a lot of things like that. Josh, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I was wondering, what do you see the goal for America? Where is America going? We have about 25 minutes of the show left, and I wanted to give you a little bit of free rein, talk about the Secret Right, the CMP, the Knights of Malta, the original goals for America, and where we're going as a nation now, and what do you think people could do out there to stop this paradigm?
Well, I mean, first off, people have to understand that our country, the United States, was set up, as you mentioned, our Constitution was set up as a fraud. You know, the story and this fable that were sold that, you know, this was set up to get free of taxation and all this is a complete and utter lie. This country was set up by fraternities, by the Freemasons, by the priest class, and by the Illuminati, and it was set up basically so that the criminals would have a home base to operate out of. That was why they had to have it, because they had been run out of every other country in the world and forced under. So they basically had to have a country to operate out of. So that's why we were set up, and this is why they've been running game here ever since then. And interesting enough, you mentioned my Justin TV channel, justin.tv/globalreality. Following this show tonight, right after the show's over here at 12 Central Time, I'm going to be premiering a new film that I just got my hands on tonight over there, and I'm trying to remember the name of it here. It's called, what is the name of it? A lot of people might be familiar with a film that came out a few years ago by a guy by the name of Yuri Lima, entitled The Emissaries of Jobulon. It was all about Freemasonry. I've showed it over there a few times. It's by that same guy, Yuri Lima. It's his newest documentary film. This gets all into the Bolshevik Revolution and how the Freemasons and whatnot, and a lot of what we're talking about now, setting up America for a Freemasonic front and whatnot. He gets into that. I'll be showing that tonight. But, the end goal of what our country is and what it was set up, our country was set up to be the main country that would, in the end, bring about the great work of the priest class, as we talked about earlier, the great work of the bloodlines, the great work of establishing the true power base for world rule of these guys that go back again to the Sumerian civilization. And that's why this country was set up. All of the founding fathers were high-level illuminists. These people were ensconced in over in England and came out of the mystery schools, now the mystery religions, and through the Illuminati, and then over here, and they came and set up this country as an engine. This is why all of the religions that came along were set up and established in this country were all set up by members of these bloodlines, from of course from the Watchtower Society with Charles Taze Russell back to the Mormons. These are all people that were all part of the Merovingian blood, and their roots go back to the Levite tribe, which is one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So from the very beginning, we were set up to basically have a home base where all this stuff could operate out of, and this is why they set this country up as, you know, bring us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. You know, bring us. We became known as the melting pot. Because they wanted to bring people together where they could bring people from all over the world, encourage interbreeding and control, and encourage all these. Meanwhile, they're keeping their bloodlines pure. But what they had to do was essentially use America as really a breeding ground for interbreeding and for to make all other humans except the elites non-pure. And that was one of the other main aspects of it. So as far as how we were set up and why we were set up, that's it. But in the end, our goal is to achieve the great work, which is total control in a global super state that in the end will be run by, as it is right now, the priest class. This is what one world religion has to do with. This is another one of those things, as we talked about the Reverend Sung Young Moon earlier. This is a part of it. They one of the first goals that people don't understand that the priest class wants to do and has had wanted to do for a long time is the CMP, people like people like Gary Bauer and people like Philip J. Rush Jr. and Howard Phillips and people like Chuck Baldwin. These guys are what they call Christian Reconstructionists, and they openly state that they want to replace the Constitution with a theocratic form of government. They want to replace the Constitution with it, and they want to make this a theocracy, meaning that instead of there being a quote-unquote Constitution, we're ruled by the Ten Commandments, and they want to stone to death homosexuals and disobedient children and all this stuff. And that's one of the first things. Now, whether or not they're still going to achieve that or they're still going to make that move or not, I don't know. I think they're going to forego that step altogether and just go for the straight, open one-world religion. But that's, in the end, that's what they want to do. They want there to be one religion that everybody in the world follows that, again, is a mishmash of all religions and theosophy really at the forefront of it, and that they will control, and then they'll control the predominant ideologies of everybody on the planet. And for some reason, in other realms that we don't know about, they believe that once they achieve this and they achieve total control of every living soul on this planet, that somehow, I don't know what they've been after that. Certainly that is the end result, and that's what we're being used for. We're being used now as the engine for technology creation. Essentially, we really only exist now. Our country really only exists now as an idea. And we exist as an idea for the rest of the world to follow, meaning we're consumers. We don't produce Jack Diddley Squad. we're here to basically follow and do as we're told and go along. They want us to become the model for what world citizens are. Just people that go along to get along, people that are obsessed with material reality and obsessed with money and all these material trinkets and things. And in that way, we're following and doing whatever they say they want us to do. And a lot of people have this figured out, and a lot of people don't. But that, in the end, is what they want. They want to craft this country into the model for what the rest of the countries under the New World Order are going to be.
I think they're doing an incredible job on that. I think a lot of people, you know, America, I think, has a mixed perception in the world, being everyone likes to talk smack about Americans, and yet every country tries to turn into an America. You know, all the Western civilizations, I believe, you know, America is the blueprint for a lot of those things, with varying degree of socialism in there. Now, I do notice that our gross domestic product is going down, and they are, it seems like they are trying to turn America into a shopping mall very successfully. A lot of the stuff, and Eric John Phelps had gone into the fact that a lot of the Rothschilds control what's the Chinese domestic, or what gets imported into China. And I believe that's going to be the next step for us, is, you know, we're going to be playing with Russian toys and Chinese toys. And like you said, during the week, you know, it's going to be pretty vital for us at one point to start learning Chinese. And I'm thinking that's going to be a reality, because if you look what's going on there, I mean, they pretty much have the totalitarian, you know, I believe China right now is going to be a model of where we're going to be soon, as far as the limiting of the birth rates, you know, the totalitarian system they have over there. And a lot of their the persecution of the religion over there and a lot of stuff, I do see us converting over to that system, and it's very disheartening, you know. But as far as now that we know the goal, how do we get out of that, Josh? You know, what can we do? I know, you know, I don't like we think and group think and things of this matter, but now, as a bunch of free thinking individuals, where do you see the change happening? What can we do as an individual basis which will stop this priestcraft from happening? Or is that even a reality anymore? Do you think there's any way to stop what's going on here? And where do we fall into that as free-thinking individuals?
Well, that's sort of dualistic in and of itself, Everett, really, because it's double-sided. On the one end, the one thing we have to continue to do, as you mentioned earlier, where you were talking about the New World Order and all this stuff, and how they, you know, try to acclimate us to what's already here. But at the same time, you know, that's the whole thing about it, is that we got to start showing people, number one, not only that that this stuff is, you know, is already here, but we got to show these people that it exists, period. That's the main thing about it, is that is that the fact that we've just got to continue. I think the solution really lies in the individual people doing their part in their own way to talk about it and to get it out there and do whatever. And certainly, you know, with, like, you starting your own show here, doing this, and I do my show and make my films and do that. And everybody's just doing their own part and continuing to just try to get it out there and create a mass of humanity that knows about this stuff. That's really the only long-term goal that we really have. It's to just continual push for a mass awakening and a mass attention on the New World Order, which is already here, and all the things that are going on, to just show people how long this has been going on. But on the flip side of that, on the other side of that coin, that's one thing. But on the other side, I think, and I talked about this today on my show, and this is what I'm leaning more towards, is I think that this also comes down to each and every one of us also, as they say, putting our own houses in order, so to speak, becoming enlightened individuals ourselves, figuring out how we attain things, as we talked about earlier, like 12-strand DNA activation, figuring out how we access these other realms of reality, how we access other realms and other dimensions, finding out how to access and communicate with the spirit world in positive ways, you know, different things, how to use different these magic rituals, the sacred knowledge. How do we take that, learn that, and then use it to our advantage against these evil people. To me, that is the ultimate solution. To me, that's it. But there's not going to be a whole lot of us that are going to choose that path. That's why I say there's a dualistic edge to it. There's one thing where we continue to just awaken people and try to get people, and then that will sort of lead itself to its own path and its own solution. I think that, if you think about it, Everett, if everybody knew what you and I knew right now on this planet, we wouldn't even be sitting here having this conversation. We'd be out living our lives or doing something more productive because everybody would know about it, and these people wouldn't be in power. So I think on the other side of that is also telling, making ourselves understand and becoming comfortable with ourselves and making ourselves understand that this is all temporary, and this is all materialistic, and this is a physical plane that they control, and that there are other realms of reality outside of this that we can ascend to outside of this realm of suffering, outside of this very limited and temporary life. And I think that comes down to individual choice, and it doesn't require you to subscribe to it. The beautiful thing about it is, to me, it doesn't require you to subscribe to a religion. It doesn't subscribe you to put all your faith in a god or a number of gods or a devil or a Satan or anything else. A goddess, it doesn't require you to do anything, any of that. Those things can be up to the individual, and honestly, I don't really care if you do or don't believe in those things. It makes no consequence to me. The only thing I ask of people, the only thing that concerns me, is people buying lies and people buying what the priest class and the hierarchy are trying to sell to them. But I think that in the end, your own spiritual quest towards attaining enlightenment and attaining the knowledge of the esoteric and the knowledge of the ancients, they were our greatest gifts. I mean, this knowledge was intended for us, and these bastards that are in charge have hijacked this, and they've turned it around, and they've used it as a weapon against humanity instead of what it's supposed to be used for, which is our ultimate gift to show us what we're capable of so we can achieve the highest aspects of ourselves. So to me, in the end, Everett, I think that ultimately that is the end goal, is that you know, number one, mass awakening, number two, enough people figuring out what it is and what these other of spiritual warfare that they're using against us, and using it can be defeated, Everett, but they're not going to be defeated with this old school patriot paradigm of, we got to stand up for Constitution, we got to lock and load, get your bunkers, get your weapons. This is not, people have been, you know, people's hearts are in the right place for the most part on this, I think, Everett, but their souls and their minds are not in the right place. And this is, to me, where we have to start shifting people towards, is this idea that this battle is beyond this five-sense physical reality they want us to constantly be attached to.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly. And one of the key things you can do as far as understanding what I like to call the keepers, you know, because it is in effect a prison planet. I'm not endorsing anybody there, but in a way, we are definitely in a 3D prison here. And to understand where we're at and where you need to go, Josh Reed's films, 9/11, New World Rising. Are you still plugging that? Is that a DVD you're still selling? Can we get that
sure.
anywhere?
Sure. They're still for sale as well. Yes.
Where can we get that at?
You can go to newworldrisingmovie.blogspot.com or you can just send $20 to dayglow76@yahoo.com. Either way, if you want to do that. But I was offering a special last week. I'm going to do right now tonight for the Mystic Politics listeners only tonight. If you order a copy of Tonight Only right now while you're listening to this show, not on a rebroadcast, right now while you're listening to this show, if you order, go to seeyourrightmovie.com and order a DVD for my friend Everett, for his listeners. You're going to get a copy of my first film, 9/11 New World Rising, along with that for free.
That's excellent. Yeah, that's excellent. I went ahead and dropped a link for the www.secretrightmovie.com. We went ahead and dropped that in the chat room for the listeners in there. And that movie is great. That movie gets into a lot of the connections of the CFR, a lot of all the problems with the 9/11 theory as conventionally told in mass media, a lot of stuff about CFR, Kissinger, Bush, Cheney, and those people's group power. And then the new movie, The Secret Right, at secretrightmovie.com, that movie gets into a lot of the new geopolitical stuff and the new power elite And a lot of the stuff that, you know, even if you think you're a truther, for instance, you know, I listened to a couple of Alex Jones shows and I thought I had the whole world figured out. And this is something you like to mention a lot, which is if you're static in your beliefs, if you're static as far as not learning and you think you've got everything figured out, odds are you have the total – you're in a paradigm of one sort or another because there is so much info. You can never get done researching, and I'm sure that kind of – I'm sure you've come to that conclusion yourself, Josh, where it's, you know, if you're not in a state of constant learning, you know, you're not doing – the right stuff, and you know, you have drawn the wrong conclusion. It must get frustrating in a way. I know that the more I start to look at this stuff, the more I realize I don't know in regards to a lot of the geopolitics and a lot of the a lot of how the connections manifest themselves and how these groups work together. But I pretty much got the gist. You know, there is an elite priest class, and they're you know, subjugating us into a 3D paradigm in order to keep us from evolving, because if we just pretty much jump ship, there's going to be no one to mine their gold. And it seems to me that monatomic gold and just slaves and workhorses is what they need on this. They have some kind of goal, a 3D goal for America, and it could be something. And something I'm struggling with is trying to figure out what do you think about, real quick? We only got about 7 minutes left here, Josh. So real quick, if I was wondering what you think about the possibility that they may be trying to turn our solar system into a trilogy of stars, maybe with igniting Jupiter as in 2010, which I think is a very key movie. I think everybody should go look at 2010 right now and 2001. And as far as igniting Jupiter and maybe the Nemesis star, and I was wondering if you've researched those subjects a little bit.
Well, honestly, yeah, and I say, yeah, the whole Lucifer Project thing and whatnot. Yeah, I've looked at that stuff. I don't know. I don't really know if I believe that or not. Very well could be. My thing is, as you were mentioning though, a second ago, about, you know, if you ever get to the point where you're just at one level of understanding, or, you know, you think you know everything about it, well, you're pretty much dead. You know, you've got to constantly be in a state of flux. I'm constantly learning new stuff. The thing about that is, I won't ever say that I don't think anything is possible. I won't ever say that I don't believe anything unless it's just absolute out-and-out provable disinfo. But I will say this, there isn't a plan to – I mean, you look at – they've already been geoengineering our planet. Been geoengineering this planet. Now, the only thing about with the whole second sun thing and the whole Lucifer Project thing, the only reason that whole situation sounded like BS to me was because, you know, these people are trying to get out into the other realms of the planets, and they want to mine some of these other planets for resources. Now, there's a lot of information and a lot of people that believe that in the past, our stars, that we were a binary star system in the past, and some great event caused us to go to, because if you look at it, every system, star system in the universe, in all in out there, are all binary. So we're one of the few, and almost one of the very few, mono star systems. So it very well could be, they're trying to do that. They're trying to, just don't know. I don't put too much stock in it, but I will say that I definitely think it's possible. But I think more of what's going on here is that they do want to get off this planet. They want to leave Earth as basically a prison planet and set up a utopia on other planets, mine for resources and whatnot, and continue this. I think in the end, the solution is going to be us figuring out some way to break down this reality and breaking down the barriers of our three-dimensional existence, accessing other barriers, our DNA in our bodies, transforming to new physical bodies, and that they're no longer going to be able to run supreme on us, and I think that's what they're trying to stop.
Do you believe that's all regulated via the pineal gland? Like, do you? And I'm looking into a lot of this stuff myself, and as far as I understand, it seems to me that transcending, in my mind, would be keeping in ditching this physical body. Do you see as transcending, or do you see that in the creation of a new physicality? Or do you see that as a regulated by the pineal? And I wonder what, in your head, what the transforming is, or in reaching new plateaus in this humanism or the spirituality. I wonder how you see that manifesting itself.
Well, I don't really have a lot of time to go into it, but basically what I see is the fact that our DNA, when you look at 5-strand, 6-strand DNA, these DNA strands exist beyond 3 dimensions. They exist in 4 dimensions, 5 dimensions, 6 dimensions, on up to 12 dimensions. So understand that our physical bodies would not exist in the physical way they exist in now. Other dimensions of reality, there may be 4-dimensional beings around us all the time, but we can't see them because we're living in a 3-dimensional world. So that's what I believe is that ascension and our bodies transforming into other dimensional life forms in other dimensions that only someone who is, say, a 4th-dimensional entity or a 5th-dimensional entity can see. That's what I believe. I believe we're going to transcend to another level of reality that is there and is always there and is constantly there and is there right now. But we're at some lower level of evolution of yet that we haven't got to. And I believe they're trying to disciple this this evolution and this ascension into these other realms of reality. Because, again, they control this realm of reality. It doesn't appear they control these other dimensions.
That's definitely what it looks like to me. And very, very interesting stuff. That's the stuff that really I love it when you get into that stuff on your show. It really kind of tickles those little neurons for me. And because I definitely think that's the answer. People need to, you know, search inwardly, study everything, study all the religions, study a lot of the esoteric stuff. And keep in mind that just because you're reading it in print, it doesn't make it real. You know, it could be propaganda. But in every form of propaganda, there's an element of truth which they're using to twist your perceptions. So even if you read so I recommend that people read everything, listen to the Josh Reeves show, listen to a lot of the other shows, and just, you know, keep all your knowledge progressive. Just keep studying everything, and don't reject anything outright, because even if it's false, there's got to be elements of truth in there. So I definitely suggest everybody keep researching. Now we have about 2 minutes left, Josh. I just want to say thank you very much for being on my show. Learned a lot. I've kept new notes in regards to this show as well, and I'll be listening to this show in archive to try to pull more info out of that in regards to the CMP. And let's see, you have about a minute left. Do you want to plug your various projects?
Yeah, just again, people check me out on Monday through Friday, Oracle Broadcasting, 11 to 3 Central Standard Time, or the alternative to the Alex Jones program there, 11 to 3, 4-hour show Monday through Friday, Saturday nights 10 to midnight. And secretrightmovie.com is where you can do it. Just continue to spread the word and just continue to just do your own thing, be your own individual, and set aside your ego and your ego self and your fear of what other people think about you, and just do something great for once in your life. That's all I really have to say. Thanks for having me on tonight, Everett. It was a real pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Josh, and hopefully we can get you on in the future. I'd like to really go into Sirius, which I know you have a lot of info, so maybe we can schedule something in the future in regards to the Sirius star system and how that relates to Earth. I would love to do that. But I want to thank you for being on. It was a great show, and we're going to go ahead and leave you guys with a little bit of something. Let's see here. It's going to be Footsteps by the Isley Brothers. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Mr. Josh Reeves from the Global Reality. It was a great show. Hope to hear you guys again soon. Bye.
Or go back and stay.